Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Tony Heil, council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, which is near Philadelphia, or much closer to King of Prussia, which some people know. Today, I'm home with my kids, and they're in another room, and I told my son they needed to go to another room because I was talking to someone from Colorado today, and he's six, and he said, "From Colorado? Do they speak another language there?" And I don't know that that's true. Every state's got its own unique politics. But the lesson I think I'm going to hear today with my really exciting guest will hopefully be a language that we can all get. And that is that you need to run for office or get involved wherever and whatever your powerful story is, because that's the only way you can make a difference. Of course, my guest today is Representative Brianna Titone. She is from Colorado. She's got a really cool science background, which I appreciate, but her story is much more than any one thing. So with all that in mind, please welcome Brianna Titone. Thank you so much for calling me today for the podcast.
My pleasure. Happy to be with you today.
So for me, Colorado seems really neat. My friend, my council president, Kyle Shank, he spends vacations in Colorado sometimes. My school board member is from there. But before I get to Colorado, I was looking up, and you're originally from New Paltz, New York, right?
That's right.
I went to college in Poughkeepsie, in Marist College, so I know New Paltz, and I think it's a great place.
Yeah, I do miss upstate New York a little bit, but I end up going back to visit some people every once in a while. Poughkeepsie's a great place, right across the river from where I grew up. Lots of history and the fall colors, which we don't really have a lot of here out in Colorado.
But the one thing I know from the Hudson Valley all in Colorado that I think is true for both is that they are two of the most gorgeous parts of the country.
Yeah, Colorado is a place where people come to visit from all over the country and all over the world. And, you know, New York is also a lot more than just New York City, which a lot of people kind of forget about. Just get outside of New York City and there's lots of wonderful places to visit as well.
So, and you've been in Colorado for a bit. Like I said at the beginning, I'm from the Philadelphia area, and there's a lot of presumptions and assumptions of Colorado. And so it used to be, I think, a really Republican area, and now it's not. And I think people don't really understand the politics of Colorado. So what do you think people who are listening should know about the state of Colorado politics?
Oh, sure. Colorado has always been referred to as a purple state, and we have quite a few varying opinions here. We have very progressive people, very interested in environmental change and social justice, and then we also have on the other side of the coin are very fiscally conservative folks, and we also are home of the focus on the family group, who are very much into their religious aspect of things and being anti-abortion and anti-LGBT for the most part. So we have quite a variety of varying spectrum of different opinions here in Colorado. We have a few things here that are quite unique to any state. One of those is the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. We call it TABOR. And TABOR came in around 1992. It was a ballot initiative that the people voted on, and it's now part of our Constitution. It took four tries for it to get on there. It just barely did on the fourth try. But what TABOR does is it sets a set of rules around fiscal responsibility, and it takes away the power of legislators to actually raise taxes. Mm. So me as a legislator, I have no way of creating new revenue for just about anything unless it's approved by the voters. And on top of all that, if we do want to ask the voters to vote for a tax increase, when the ballot initiative is put on the ballot, it has to say how much revenue the ballot initiative will generate. So if we were to raise tax revenue for transportation, for example, it would say, do you want to raise taxes $785 million to do blah, blah. Most people don't get past the first part of that because people are scared away to say, like, wow, are you out of your mind? You want to raise taxes $785 million? And then those initiatives usually get voted down. We've only had a few tax increases that were actually approved by voters, and they've been in the form of sin taxes. So we legalized marijuana. We tax it. We get money for that. We legalized sports betting last year to help our water conservation initiatives and our water plan. And these are the kinds of things that people will vote for, but any other form of the tax increases really doesn't happen. So we live under a very, very tight budget. And because of that tight budget, we have a lot of things that are not being addressed properly. So school funding is seriously impeded. Our school teachers are paid in the bottom of the United States. Our per pupil spending is very low. Our in-state tuition for higher ed is one of the highest. Our transportation shortfall is around $9 billion. And when it comes to funding things like suicide prevention, because every dollar that we have is spent, and we're required to have a balanced budget so we can't overspend what we have, every dollar goes out the door. And when you want to fund something, you have to take away from something else. So in the example of suicide prevention, if we wanted $500,000 to go to suicide prevention, we have the number one highest youth suicide rate in the whole entire country, and we are number six overall, and we want to spend $500,000 on that. We can't even get that. Last year, we asked for that much. We got $100,000 of funding because there's a lot of demands for a lot of different programs that we in the legislature try to enact, and we just don't have the money to spend it all because all of the money is already allocated to other things. So it's a very complicated political environment here because people are demanding that we do things. We fix those roads and we pay the teachers well, and there's just not enough money to go around to do it.
Wow. I mean, I remember when Colorado became famous for legalizing marijuana and taxing it. And so, you know, I'm in Pennsylvania and people say we should do the same because look what we could do. And no one digs more than two sentences into that story to get that information. So I can only imagine how frustrating that it is, especially to new legislators who may know about those issues. But once you deal with your first budget, it's probably where you get your first sense of big frustration.
Yeah, it's definitely when you actually see the numbers and have to go through everything and vote on these issues, you really start to understand the nuances of these tax policies. Like, Tabor is not the only tax policy we have. We have another one called the Gallagher Amendment. That's a property tax initiative that was a great idea when it started out because it was a pretty equitable way of balancing commercial and personal property taxes. But what it's done is it's caused this real tipping of the scales, which have dropped personal property taxes down really, 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 really low. But it's also jacked up commercial property taxes really, 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 really high. For local governments, that's the source of a lot of their school funding. So we have very inequitable school funding because you can supplement your losses of property tax income by increasing property taxes by asking the voters if they let you. And in places like Denver, people are more likely to say yes to property tax increases or mill levy increases to try to even out those schools. But in a lot of places, in conservative areas in particular, or places where they just don't have adequate incomes to actually absorb any kind of tax increase, they're not able to say yes to that, or they're reluctant to say yes to that, or they just plain don't want to raise the tax. So their schools suffer, and we have an incredible, inequitable school funding in Colorado. But most people looking in on the outside without any kind of information, they just demand that the leaders in their government do something, but they don't want to take the time to learn about what it is that's causing the things to be the way they are.
So I think that that's an important story, because people who are running for office, before they run for office, they don't know what to expect once they're in. But again, the podcast is called You Should Run. You also don't know what to expect when you start to run. When I first got on the phone with you, you were saying you had a very unique race with some challenges. So as a legislator, you have these roadblocks that you weren't expecting. But you had a particularly challenging campaign that was met with, let's say, skepticism, correct?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
So tell me about that. Like, did you know what you were getting into when you decided to run for state legislature? Because I don't know if you really know all the details of what's going to happen with these tax issues when you're a legislator. No matter how smart you are, once you're doing it, the issues come up in ways you don't expect. But were you prepared for what was going to happen when you decided to run for office?
I kind of got into running for office through the activism route. When I came out as being trans in 2015, I realized I was in part of a group of folks that needed someone to speak out for them, and I was the kind of person that would want to do that. So I started to be an advocate and went down the Capitol for the first time, really, in 2015. And started really paying a little closer attention to what was going on, learning about some of the things that were being talked about in the Capitol. But unless you really are immersed in politics a lot, it's really hard to pick up on a lot of things. So when you start out in the legislature, you know, they call it drinking from the fire hose. For a reason, because there's just so much coming at you all at once, and there's just so many things you have to absorb and try to figure out what's going on. But when I decided to run for this office, it was because the incumbent who I was running against really didn't take the job seriously, and he didn't take care of the constituents. He hardly ever was at his town halls. He wouldn't answer his phones or even have staff to answer his phones or emails. And people just really felt like they weren't being adequately addressed. So that's where I decided that, you know, this would be something I could use to counter what he is not doing, to say that, you know, he's doing nothing and I'm going to do everything for you. And that was kind of my angle. I'm also coming in with 4 college degrees, 2 bachelor's degrees, and 2 master's degrees, and a long history of volunteer work in my community, which are all definitely things that show the people that, yeah, I've been working in my community my whole entire life. I'm not doing this because I want my ego inflated. I'm doing this because I want to do the work for the people. So that's what I use to try to win people over, and we did by knocking on tens of thousands of doors and telling people about my history and my goals and how I wanted to be honest and transparent with everyone. But this district was drawn after the 2010 census to be a Republican district. And even the incumbent, who was a Democrat coming in to the new district, wasn't able to win. And that was because it was drawn that way by design. So since the district was drawn, no Democrat came anywhere close to winning the district. I had to really, really win people over by giving them a reason to take a chance with me. Part of it was national consensus on, you know, voting in Democrats because they were dissatisfied with what the Republicans were doing. That definitely helped. But, you know, when you have a good candidate with a good message and putting in the work and having those personal conversations, we ended up winning the district for the first time when people thought it was impossible to win because I was a Democrat, never mind adding on being a transgender person on top of that.
Yeah, and I know you were the first transgender person to be elected in Colorado, right?
That's right.
And I didn't want to start with that because obviously that's important. That's your story. It's important. But, you know, I look at your background, and while it's great being transgender, I'm sure you don't want to only be known as the transgender person in the legislature. You have this amazing background that I think really colors your experience that no one else has on, especially environmental and planning issues.
Right, and that's exactly what I did when I ran was talked about, you know, that I'm a scientist, that, you know, I'm a geologist, and I worked in different countries and all over the place working with different people on different projects, and I have a lot of knowledge that is really something that people really want to see in the legislature. They want to see people that are going to look at things in a more scientific and logical way, and that's what I was bringing, and being a scientist was something that people were excited about. I didn't really talk about being trans. I mean, I just go up to the door and just say, hey, my name is Brianna Stone, I'm running for House District 27, and, you know, I mean, sometimes people would kind of look at me and not say anything for a second because they were trying to just digest what was going on, and some people would even look at the lit and say, oh, yeah, I might vote for her. I'm like, yeah, her is me. Like, see, don't you see the picture looks just like me? Like, you know, people still didn't quite get it, even when I was standing in front of them, showing them a piece of literature with my picture on it. But, you know, it wasn't my job to be telling everybody I was trans because it was just, you know, a secondary thing about me. What really was about what I was going to do is that work for the people, and that's what we focused on. And the media covered that I was trans, and that was fine. And even after the election, some people said that they didn't know I was trans. Even after all the media coverage, they still didn't know. And as long as they're happy with the work that I do, I really don't think that my identity really has a role in what I do in this job.
The one thing about the identity, though, they're looking at your Twitter account, is you, again, you have this amazing experience, and yet there are people in Colorado, like you said, who are trying to deny basic LGBTQ rights. And I'm sure for you, maybe I'm wrong, but for you both, you find it reprehensible, and also there's got to be a sense of, come on, we have so many important things. Why are you doing this? Can't we do these things that are important instead of being, well, terrible?
Yeah, I mean, it's a complete waste of time. I mean, when you hear the sponsors of these bills talking to the media, and they say flat out, like, I don't expect this bill to pass. And, you know, they're doing it for messaging purposes. They're doing it to rile up a group of people that, you know, really care about not giving rights to LGBT people. And that's what they're doing. This is an election year, so this is a messaging, these are messaging bills for them. And, you know, while that messaging may generate a few dollars for them, it's actually hurting people. And people are nervous. They have enough anxiety in their life that even the thought of these bills being introduced is something that, you know, it hurts them. And young people these days that are facing bullying and thoughts of suicide and all these horrible things that they have to do just because of who they are, we shouldn't be adding more problems to their lives by introducing these bills. So, you know, we banded together and we sent them to the committee to kill them, and we killed all those bills. And we used that time that people were testifying on those bills to make sure that they were educating people about what the issue really is, because that's what was really important. Is if they're going to message in a negative way, we were going to message in a positive way and be sure that we told people the truth about these issues and why they're so bad.
Well, I'm really glad that the culture has changed, and that, I mean, I remember in the 90s when these issues were coming up, and the viewpoints and all these things has changed so dramatically, for the most part, all over the country in such a positive way. But one thing also that I think I've noticed in my area, with people who ran for Congress, and obviously you, is more scientists running for office. There's a lot of lawyers in politics. I'm sure it's the same there in Colorado as it is here, but what difference does it make to have more scientists involved? Because for me, climate change and things like these are some of those important issues in any state, the country, the planet. So what do you bring as a scientist, and why is that important?
Well, I mean, science is really the truth. Like, you know, there's so much about science that is all about what the truth really is. I mean, we don't just put out scientific discoveries without testing them and retesting them and having independent people look at those things and again and again repeat the results to make sure that we know that what we're talking about is in fact the truth. And that's why I think that scientists really look for the truth. And when I have people in committee, I make sure that, you know, I'm trying to ask them the right questions and challenging them to say, well, you're giving me something that is counter to what I know as a scientist. What are your qualifications? Tell me what your sources are. You know, a lot of things that maybe some other people that may not be familiar with how science is that rigorous may not ask those questions. You know, there's even in the federal government, there's not a lot of actual scientists on the science committee, which is pretty sad. So we need to get more people that actually know about the topics that we're voting on, and especially in the committees, where that's the first line of when we're getting these bills out to the General Assembly to vote on. We need to have the scientists actually pick apart the issues there and make it a valid decision as to whether this bill, as it's written, has the merit to continue on to a vote of the whole entire House.
Yeah, I've talked to a few people on here on this podcast from different parts of the country who, you know, if they hadn't run, maybe another Democrat would have won. It may, like, the main election was in the Democratic primary, but they brought an experience that no other Democrat was going to have. And so I'm sure in some of these committees, whether it's on the environment or other issues, including healthcare, which I know is important to you, you're asking questions that another potentially very progressive Democrat just wouldn't have the mindset to ask. Is that fair to say?
I would like to think so, yeah. I mean, I've been complimented by my colleagues on both sides of the aisle saying that, you know, I tend to ask good questions that tend to open their eyes about some things that they wouldn't have thought about. So if that's what I can do in my role as a scientist on those committees, then, you know, then I'm doing what I was put there to do.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things just on my local borough council. Like, we had developers in talking about putting in a big project, and they're talking about the FEMA applications. And I'm the only one asking about the FEMA applications and what needs to be at the approval level for that, just because no one else would have even thought about it. And I don't have the experience that some other people do. So, you know, and also realizing that just for development purposes, with building new homes, and I'm in an elevated area near a river, they're talking about climate change issues and storms. So I'm sure on a statewide level, you're seeing these issues on a much grander scale, and a lot of people aren't considering the details.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, scientists on the local level are also very important, because there's a lot of things that happen at the local level that, especially with development, I mean, there's so many developments that are going in places where they need to put a lot more thought into it. And, you know, these developers don't really care about putting in something and taking all everyone's money without the future in mind and what the impact is going to be, because they're going to be on to the next project by then. And, you know, it's up to the leaders, whether they're on the state or the local level, to make sure that they're asking those questions and thinking about the future, because climate change is really having an impact on so many things that it's surprising at times how many of those things really are things that we can have the ability to legislate in a different way.
Yeah. Well, so you brought up the future. The podcast is called You Should Run. And so the first question along those lines about the future is, what do you see that's good about Colorado, or in the challenges you faced, that you think we need to see more of to improve our politics? What do you think would make things better for producing legislation?
Well, in Colorado specifically, I think that what I like to do is talk to people in the district, because when you are talking to people about the problems that affect them, you can be sure that the issues that you're hearing from them are affecting people in other districts. And when you learn about those particular things, you can apply that to a bill, and then now you're helping not just the one person, but you're probably helping hundreds or thousands of people throughout the state that are also afflicted by those problems. So I think that a lot of the time, people aren't getting out in the communities enough. They're not talking to people and listening to people in the districts. Me personally, I have a town hall and two public events every single month, and that's all year round.
Wow.
I do a coffee, I do a beer, and then the town hall on the weekend. So I give people the opportunity. If they're an early bird, they can have a coffee. If they're someone getting home from work afterwards, they can come have a beer with me and chat about the issues. And if that doesn't work, they can always meet up with me at another time, or meet me at my office, or meet in the district. But those conversations, no matter who it is, whether it's someone on your side of the aisle or the other side of the aisle, having those conversations opens up ideas, and that's going to yield good legislation, because we're going to be actually learning about what people really need at the local level that we can impact on the state level.
Yeah, and like you said, it might be impacting everyone in the state, but when you craft legislation in Colorado, you could be a template for other states, and vice versa, they could be a template for you.
Yeah, and I'm running a piece of legislation this year that has been going around different states and has failed in 22 states, and that's the right to repair. So when it comes to consumer electronics and farm equipment in particular, you don't have any control over your own device. You're a slave to the manufacturer in fixing your device, or having to have an authorized repair person authorize your repair, even if you've done it yourself, or not have the parts. There are 22 different states that try to do this, but lobbyists and the influence of these big, huge, multi-billion-dollar, trillion-dollar companies are killing these bills all over the place. So we're really hoping that here in Colorado, if we can get this passed, even if other states can't get it passed, we can make an impact on the behavior of these big corporations in making their devices more repair-friendly and keeping things out of the landfills for a longer period of time. So any kind of legislation that you can pass on, even on a state level, can have a nationwide impact. And I'm really hoping that that particular bill takes off and we can do that here in Colorado and help the rest of the country.
It's interesting the way you described it, because you talked about, you know, helping the farmers and also keeping them out of landfills. So you have an issue like this that can help a wide swath of people and can come at a benefit for, you know, more conservative-minded thinking people and more progressive people who are caring about what do you call it, climate change and the environment. So that's, you can see how a legislation like that can have a ripple effect in a positive way for everybody.
Yeah, and for this bill, I have the assistant minority leader in the Senate, the number two Republican in the Senate, is on my bill as a sponsor. So it's very bipartisan, and usually when I talk about this issue, depending on who I'm talking to, I will talk about the freedom to be able to fix your own stuff if they're a conservative group, and if they're more progressive and environmentally minded, I'll tell them why it's important to make sure that you can use your device longer to keep it out of the landfill and reduce our dependency on having to get resources out of the ground. So, I mean, yeah, there's lots of different angles that you can take with these issues to excite one group over the other, and that's important to look at all your stakeholders involved to find out how you message these bills.
So I have two more things I want to ask. One is, I had this idea for this podcast, and at first I was talking to people who I know locally in Montgomery County and in Philadelphia and in New Jersey. And now I've gotten a chance to talk to people across most of the country, from Alaska to Florida. And I was looking at Colorado and trying to figure out who should I talk with. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the people in the legislature, there's a lot of really neat stories about who is elected. Has that been a cool experience? I think maybe underappreciated by someone interested in politics, that, yeah, they're all quote-unquote politicians because they're elected, but you get to work with some pretty neat people, right?
Absolutely, yeah. My colleagues have a lot of unique stories. One person was asked by Barack Obama himself to run for office. A lot of people started out being activists for particular issues, and they've been championing those issues, whether it be mental health or prescription drug costs. There's a really big cross-section of different occupations and just different stories that go into the legislature. And it's a really interesting thing, because in Colorado we have term limits of 8 years for the House and 8 years for the Senate. So there's no career politicians in our legislature. There's nobody who's been there for 30 years. Everybody is stepping up because they are passionate about making change and doing the work that's required to do the job. And when you have really passionate people that are running for office to do this work, you do get a lot of people that are just lifelong good citizens that want to do this job. Because, I mean, we don't get paid a lot, and we work long hours. You can make a lot more money doing anything else. Not in the legislature. So you really have to want to do this job and make a difference, because you're not going to get rich doing it. And it's all about the reward of helping people and making the change that we want to see.
Well, great. So finally, again, it's the You Should Run podcast. You have your unique story, and you've talked about some really cool people in the legislature there. If someone's listening, whether for 2020, 2021 or beyond, or for when other people are term limited out in Colorado or other states, why should more people run for office across the country?
Well, I mean, I think that it's so much better when you have choices. And, I mean, it can be overwhelming to have choices. I mean, look at what we have in the presidential race on the Democratic side right now. There's a lot of people and there's a lot of viewpoints that people have. And even in the presidential race, you can see very unique differences between the candidates that are being offered. So when we have more people running for different offices, it gives people the opportunity to pick the personality and the values that they have, that they can pick that person. Otherwise, if we just have one person running against one person, or sometimes nobody even runs, when we have those situations, we don't have somebody countering and exciting the people in the district that have different points of view. And we need to make sure that those points of views are expressed and vocalized. And that's what makes democracy great. You know, we want to make sure the people have the choice of electing the person that fits their views the best. And if there's two or three or four people, then, you know, that's just going to get more people excited about what they stand for and having the conversation about those different issues and challenging others to talk about it as well, because sometimes we're not challenging contrary viewpoints on things. And I think that's what really is important right now, is really getting the people to have more conversations about the issues that affect us most.
Great. Well, I appreciate you having those conversations, challenging people with good questioning, and hopefully putting forward some really solid legislation. If you've been listening, I hope that you're encouraged to run for office too, or if you can't or don't want to, you're encouraging someone else to do it, inspired by Brianna's story. Follow Brianna on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle again?
It's Brianna for CO.
For CO for Colorado, of course. Thank you so much, Representative Tone, for joining us, and I wish you the best of luck in Colorado. I hope one day I can come out to visit.
All right. Well, welcome out here anytime, and appreciate you having me on your podcast.
Great. And you're always welcome to come to Philly. It's a pretty good place as well, I swear.
I will. I was actually out there for the Netroots conference last year.
Oh, I was there. I even have a shirt that I wear to the gym.
Well, come out to the Netroots in Denver this year.
we'll see if time allows. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thanks very much. Have a great one.
It's a lonely road to travel, but I stood here waiting much too long, and I'd rather leave this minute than try to carry on. And I'd be 40 miles from Denver, headed eastbound on the track. I'd be 40 miles from Denver and trying to get back to that cool mountain air. Trail. Oh, life is better there.